Hello, this is Ian Berg with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. We'll start today's reading on the front page of the paper with the article "Council Denies Rezoning Request" by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. A rezoning for a business north of the city needed 10 alderman votes, or two-thirds of the city council, for approval, since the Zoning Commission earlier this month recommended denial by a 3-3 vote. It did not receive it. The Danville City Council voted 7-6 Tuesday night, with Ward 4 Alderman Mike O'Kane absent, to approve a request from Robert Brennan with his Route 1 store and lock to rezone the property at 15952 Potter's Woods Road from AG Agriculture Zoning to B2 Highway Business Zoning to allow for automobile sales and continuation of current use. The vote meant the rezoning request was denied. Aldermen voting against it were R.J. Davis, Dan Duncan, James Poshard, Tom Stone, Robert Williams, and Sherry Pickering. Aldermen heard from several nearby residents who voiced concerns about lighting, traffic, and other issues, mainly of what could go on the site, such as a gas station, if the owner sold the rezoned property. The rezoning also conflicts with the city's long-range comprehensive land use plan and existing zoning of adjacent parcels, and there was the potential for spot zoning. The property, north of the city, is within the city's 1.5-mile zoning jurisdiction. Brennan said about selling cars, "It's kind of like a side job," and the site would remain storage units well into the future. Aaron Hoff, who lives in that area on Old Seton Hill Road, said there are lots of new families with children in that area. She also commented on the wildlife in the wooded area that could be impacted. She doesn't want to see it turned into a commercial area. She said it's a nice, quiet neighborhood, and it's scary to think what business could go there in the future with rezoning. When Brennan bought the property, the use was grandfathered in. There was no zoning for the property until Walmart was built, city officials said about the property's distance to the city limits. In other business, council members heard a presentation from Green Growth Group Incorporated. It is seeking a special use permit to allow for indoor craft cannabis cultivation in the I-2 General Industrial Zoning District at warehouses at 202 and 204 Eastgate Drive. The Zoning Commission will act on the permit request on March 5th. Simone Grimes with Green Growth Group said they plan to submit a license application to the state on March 13th for operation. The state is expected to issue licenses in July. Aldermen learned the city won't receive city sales tax from the business, but Green Growth is offering 3% on annual earnings before taxes to partner with the city on substance abuse prevention and other programs required by the state and community beautification and investment, such as parks and other projects. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said this could range from about $60,000 the first year to $300,000 after the third year. Green Growth doesn't sell directly to consumers, but plans to distribute the product to dispensaries across Illinois. Grimes said dispensaries don't have sufficient supply and are seeing shortages. She said they'll have 25 new full-time jobs, with the plan to hire locally. They'll have an experienced master grower and lab technicians. "It's a very high-tech environment," Grimes said. Green Growth's Grimes and Gary Oliver said they'll be a good neighbor. They won't have signage, their transportation vehicles will be low profile and will be tracked, and there will be several security layers. It would start out with 5,000 square feet of space and grow in phases to 17,400 square feet. About 70% will be for infused products, with the remaining 30% being flour products. "Thank you for choosing Danville," said Junxian. The council, by a 9-4 vote, also approved increasing parking violation ticket fees in the downtown area. Aldermen Brendan Brown, James Poshard, Tom Stone, and Robert Williams voted against it. Now we'll go to the article. Bill could end election commission. Marin's proposal would allow voters to decide city board's fate. By Jennifer Bailey. Springfield. It's been talked about for many years, and now State Representative Mike Marin, Republican from Fithian, has filed a bill to take it to the voters on whether to merge the Danville Election Commission into the Vermilion County's clerk's office. Marin filed House Bill 5309 this week on behalf of a bipartisan panel from the Vermilion County Board, according to a press release. Recently, several county board members from both parties approached me to write legislation in Springfield to make it easier to put a referendum on the ballot to combine the duties of the Danville Election Commission into the purview of the Vermilion County Clerk, Marin said. The idea of combining the two would be strictly to save taxpayer money by eliminating one of the two departments that are doing the same job. There would be no change as far as voter access or precinct structure. However, this would simply be a way for the election process to run smoother as one holistic entity, Marin said. The legislation, if it passed, would simply allow the county board to put the measure on the ballot for the voters to decide. The final decision on whether or not to do this would be up to the voters, Marin said. The Vermilion County Board Chairman, Larry Bond, said, "I brought forth this proposal to Representative Marin after several board members from both parties approached me after an extensive discussion on this issue that has been ongoing for several years. I believe this issue has been long debated, and it is time to put the question up to the voters to decide on the election committee consolidation." Bond said there would be some increased costs in the clerk's office with this move due to equipment, supplies, and other items. "You'd never eliminate the entire budget," he said about the Danville Election Commission. The Danville Election Commission is funded by Vermilion County. Danville and Vermilion County's election processes are now separate. The Danville Election Commission's budget for this presidential election year is $319,000. Last year, it was $226,000. The budget differs year to year based on election years. Bond thinks the county would save about half of that on the budget with the elimination of the Danville Election Commission. County officials would have to determine if the county clerk's office staff could handle Danville's election process too, or if additional staff would be needed, he added, if voters would pass the referendum. The consolidation of election duties had been looked at by previous county administrations. Bond said it got to the point where it was time to put it to the voters. The House bill merely gives the county board the authority to put the question on an election ballot. It's not the county board's final decision, he added. The next general election is in November. But Bond said he is not sure how long the process could take to put the question on the ballot. "We're only one of six," he said, about more metro areas and larger municipalities in Illinois, which still have two separate election offices. "They all have merged," he said, about the others. Vermilion County Board members Bruce Stark and Becky Stark, Democrats from District 9, are among those who support the legislation to have the Vermilion County Board, by referendum, eliminate the Danville Election Commission. "I appreciate the support I've received from county elected officials from both sides of the aisle," Marin said. "As the session continues, I look forward to continuing this discussion and doing what we can to improve efficiency at every level of government." The Danville Election Commission is in charge of conducting elections in the city of Danville. It oversees city, county, state, and federal elections, and also handles voter registration for the city of Danville. according to the Danville Election Commission's website, established in 1909 by a referendum of the voters of the city of Danville. The Danville Election Commission serves as a bipartisan election office with three commissioners, appointed by the presiding circuit judge, representing either the Democratic or Republican Party. The executive director is hired by the Board of Election Commissioners and reports directly to them on all matters concerning the Danville Election Commission. Our mission is to provide fair and accurate elections. Danville and Vermilion counties' populations have been decreasing. There are 16,170 active voters in Danville. Danville Election Commission Director Sandy Delhay were selected in 2017 as the new director by the commission's three-member board, consisting of Barb Bailey, chairwoman, Charles Bostick, vice chairman, and Thomas J. Mellon, secretary. There are also two other election commission staff members. We'll now go to the death notices. Albert Laverne Johnson, Jr., 73, of Danville, passed away on Thursday, February 13th. Albert will be cremated per his wishes. Memorial donations may be placed in Albert's name to Riley Children's Hospital or St. Jude's Hospital. Frida Alice Cote, 100, of Leader, Texas, and formerly of Danville, passed away on February 12, 2020. Visitation will be on Thursday, February 20th, at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, February 21st, at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Atherton Cemetery, with military honors by American Legion Post 210. Memorials may be made in Frida's name to the Vermilion County War Museum. Norman Absher, 65, of Hoopston, died on Sunday, February 16th. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday at Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston. Burial will be in Floral Hill Cemetery. Visitation from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Thursday at the funeral home. Raymond Brinkley, 74, of Danville, died on Monday, February 17th. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at this time. Jeffrey Dale Mitchell, 73, of Boswell, Indiana, died on February 14th, 2020. A memorial service will be at 10 a.m. on Friday at Hoopston United Methodist Church. Cremation rites will be accorded and burial will be at a later date. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday at Anderson Funeral Home in Hoopston. Joseph Sykes, 65, of Tilton, died on Tuesday, February 11th. A memorial service will be at 6:30 p.m. on Monday at Crossroads Christian Church. Next, we'll go to the article, Man Held on Firearm Charges, a staff report, Danville. A Danville man was arrested Friday on several firearm charges. Dakota A. Patton, 23, of Danville, was taken into custody on charges of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, possession of a stolen firearm, and possession of a firearm without a FOID card by a convicted felon. Patton was arraigned in Vermilion County Court, and bond was set at $750,000, 10% for release. Commander Joshua Webb said Danville police responded at about 8:34 p.m. to the area of Griffin and Cleveland Streets for a report of shots fired. Upon arrival, officers observed a pickup truck leaving the area, and a traffic stop was conducted. Officers spoke with the occupants about the call of shots fired in the area. As officers received more information, a search of the vehicle was conducted and officers located a handgun inside the truck. After locating the handgun, they took Patton into custody. The investigation into this incident continues, and no other information is being released at this time. Anyone who has information regarding the incident is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or call Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. And now we'll go to an article, Danville Man Among Those Arrested, an FBI Operation in Kankakee, a staff report, Urbana. A Danville man was among the 15 Central Illinois men arrested during the weekend related to an FBI operation conducted in Kankakee County. According to Central District of Illinois U.S. Attorney John C. Millhiser, an FBI Special Agent in Charge, Sean M. Cox, Springfield Division. Cole Montgomery, 25, of the 173rd block of 2400 North Road in Danville, faces charges of attempted enticement of a minor and attempted sexual exploitation of a child, according to information from the U.S. Attorney's Office. The men have been charged in separate criminal complaints with attempted enticement of a child to engage in illegal sexual activity. Some have also been charged with attempted sexual exploitation of children. The complaints were unsealed on February 18th, as each made their respective initial appearances in federal court in Urbana. Each was ordered detained pending hearings scheduled later this week. The operation was conducted with the coordination and assistance of the Bradley Police Department, the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office, and the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group. According to the affidavits filed in support of the complaints, each of the men allegedly used various social media applications to contact and engage online with FBI covert employees posing as 14 and 15-year-old minors to make arrangements to meet the minor girl or boy with the intent to engage in sexual activity. Some of the men attempted to entice or coerce the minors to send them sexually explicit images. As the men arrived at or near the designated address in Bradley, they were arrested and taken into custody by FBI special agents, the Bradley Police Department, the Kankakee County Sheriff's Office, and the Kankakee Area Metropolitan Enforcement Group. Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson is representing the government in the case prosecutions. The defendants charged in this operation with attempted enticement of a minor are Joshua T. Cohen, 27, of Buckley, Jody L. Legacy, 45, of Kankakee, Shane R. Ferris, 23, of Bourbonnais, Nick Vincent Sr., 25, of Kankakee, Dale Martin Alvin Scaring, 26, of Bradley, Robert Sean Anderson, 50, of Paxton, Brian Rossi, 29, of Park Forest, and Timothy Lyle Dean, 37, of Bourbonnais. The defendants, in addition to Montgomery, charged in this operation with attempted enticement of a minor and attempted sexual exploitation of a child, were Matthew T. Gibbon, 48, of Kankakee, Ryan I. Woodruff, 21, of Kankakee, Anmal Chug, 28, of St. Anne, Kyron Williams, 30, of Kankakee, Joseph Adam Longnecker, 40, of Montana, and Jazzy Simmons, 28, of Kankakee. If convicted for the offense of attempted enticement of a minor, each defendant faces a minimum of 10 years and up to life in prison. For the offense of attempted sexual exploitation of a child, each defendant faces a minimum of 15 years and up to 30 years in prison. These cases were brought as part of Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative by the Department of Justice to combat child sexual exploitation and abuse. And now for some news in sports, we'll head to the article, Defending the Home Court, Danville Advances to Regional Championship, by Greg Flint, Danville. It was not third time is the charm for Champaign Central as it traveled to Danville to meet the Vikings for the third time this season. The visitors turned the game into a physical battle, but Danville was able to handle that style of play and picked up their third win of the season over the Maroons by the score of 66-53. It was all Vikings in the early going as they saw ties at 2-all and 3-all before going on a 14-2 run in the remainder of the first period. In that span, Natika Conway got things going for the host, and then Haupt began to heat up, getting a pair of layups and a tray, with Zaitara Boyd chipping in with a bucket. Danville pushed their lead up to 14, at 21-7, with about 2 minutes gone in the second quarter. But then the Maroons began to chip into the lead. In the first quarter, the visitors seemed nervous, as they missed easy shots and made some unforced turnovers. But those went away in the second period. A late 13-0 run by Champaign Central allowed them to turn a 28-11 score into a 28-24 tally by halftime. "We knew we'd be in it for a battle tonight," Danville coach Zach Patterson said. "They are a physical team and well-coached, so you knew they'd put up a fight. I'm proud of how we handled things." Haupt and Miracle Payne hit free throws to start the third quarter for the Vikings, but their opponent responded with some of their own and drew as close as 1 point at 31-30, with 5 minutes and 37 seconds left in the period. Conaway and Haupt responded to push the margin back up to 5, with a pair of steals that led to layups for a 35-30 score. After a pair of Maroon free throws, Haupt and Conaway gave the team some breathing room, as the former made a runner and the latter a tray off a pass from Boyd. Anaja Reed then scored for the Vikings to give the team an 8-point lead before the visitors scored the last three of the period for a 42-37 total, favoring the hosts. The Maroons would not quit, and they once again cut into the lead, trimming it to only 3 points for just 30 seconds into the final quarter. Boyd then took over for the Vikings, and a minute later had the team up 7. At the 5-minute mark, Danville led 49-39 after a pair of Thuria Rose free throws started a run by both teams to the charity stripe, as both were in the bonus. With about 3 minutes left, the Vikings lost their post player to 5 fouls, and that seemed to open the lane for the Vikings. Using good floor spacing and excellent ball movement, the hosts were able to get the basket repeatedly, either getting a layup or drawing fouls. The Champaign Central then began to foul as soon as a Danville player touched it in bounds, and the foul count soon put the Vikings into the double bonus. Rose kept getting the ball, getting fouled, and making enough free throws that the Maroons could never catch up, and the game ended with a 66-53 score. Patterson says he preaches next play matters, and that was important in this contest with the number of fouls and deflected balls by both teams. "We put it behind us and moved into the next play," he explained. "And we just kept looking forward." Patterson said at this time of the season, it's all about trust. "I didn't start Rose," he said, "and she was okay with that because she knew we needed energy off the bench. And Boyd, she sometimes hurts for confidence, but I know she makes great passes and great decisions, so I trusted her to be on the floor." With the win, Danville advances to the regional final, a game that Patterson calls ours because it's our regional. The Vikings will play the second-seeded Mount Zion Braves, a 59-30 winner over Rantoul, at 7 p.m. on Thursday. Now we'll go to the article, Two New Legionnaires Cases Reported at Center Where One Died, from the Associated Press, Chicago. Two new cases of Legionnaires' disease have been reported at a suburban Chicago senior living center, bringing the outbreak's total cases to 5, including one previous fatal case, health officials said on Tuesday. The Lake County Health Department said it's working with the Illinois Department of Public Health to investigate the 5 cases of the disease at Brookdale Senior Living in Vernon Hills. The health department had said February 5th that one person over the age of 80 had died, and that 2 other residents at the senior living center had been sickened by the disease, which is caused by inhaling water vapor infected with Legionella bacteria. Brookdale Senior Living has been working to combat the disease by flushing water lines, cleaning shower heads, adding filters, and closing a pond, pool, and spa, a company spokesman said to the Chicago Sun-Times. The health of our residents and associates is our greatest concern, and we are taking appropriate steps regarding the Legionella bacteria, the senior center said in a news release. Legionella bacteria are transmitted through water droplets from showers or fountains. Most healthy people are not infected after being exposed to the bacteria, but it can be deadly. Last year, a state audit was critical of the Department of Public Health and Veterans Affairs for delays in taking action and notifying nursing staff and the public about a 2015 outbreak at Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy that left 13 elderly residents dead. Next, we'll go to an article. Few in Springfield support Blagojevich commutation, from Jerry Nowicki at Capital News, Illinois. There was little support Tuesday at the former stomping grounds of ex-Governor Rod Blagojevich for President Donald Trump's decision to commute the remaining years of the disgraced former Democratic governor's 14-year corruption sentence. Republicans and Democrats from various levels of state and federal government issued public statements condemning the president's decision, which was initially reported by ABC News Tuesday morning. Several others received commutations from the president Tuesday, as well, according to the Associated Press. "Yes, we commuted the sentence of Rod Blagojevich," Trump told reporters Tuesday, before boarding Air Force One. "He served 8 years in jail, a long time. He does seem like a very nice person. Don't know him." Blagojevich, who was a contestant on Trump's Celebrity Apprentice television program in 2010, began serving a 14-year federal prison sentence in 2012. He was convicted on 11 criminal counts related to his effort to sell the U.S. Senate seat vacated by Barack Obama when he became president. Illinois House Republican leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs called Trump's decision disappointing and said he was never going to be able to figure out how the president messages nor the decision-making that he does. "Currently, we have a massive federal investigation into corruption in the state of Illinois, and this action distracts and also dilutes what I think is the proper role of the Department of Justice to root out corruption," he said. In a statement, Governor Jay Pritzker, who has argued on several occasions that Blagojevich should serve his full sentence, echoed that sentiment. "Illinoisians have endured far too much corruption, and we must send a message to politicians that corrupt practices will no longer be tolerated," he said in the statement. "President Trump has abused his pardon power in inexplicable ways to reward his friends and condone corruption. And I deeply believe this pardon sends the wrong message at the wrong time. I'm committed to continuing to take clear and decisive steps this spring to prevent politicians from using their offices for personal gain. And I will continue to approach this work with that firm conviction." Blagojevich also was convicted on 6 counts related to campaign contribution shakedowns, including 1 count which he essentially tried to trade $8 million in added state funding to a pediatric specialist for a $25,000 campaign donation from a hospital CEO. That's all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian Berg with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. Thanks for joining me today.